Bell non-locality, cochin spectrum contextuality can be defined as data distributions that conform to certain conditional independence relations or independence relations, but cannot be, but are not compatible with the causal models that embody those same conditional independences. Typically, these conditional independencies, they physically manifest as assumptions of no signaling or more generally no disturbance among measurements. But there's been interest lately in certain communities in extending the notion of contextuality to situations where disturbance is necessarily present, both within physics and in other fields where we're not talking about quantum theory anymore, but we're still interested in whether notions of contextuality can be informative about the nature of physical systems under study. So that's sort of my program here, is to see what sort of extensions are possible of this notion of contextuality to the context of disturbance, and sort of grounding that in a causal modeling framework, quantifying strength of causal influences, and so on. Now, there is one theory that's out there that many of you may know that addresses this question of, that extends the notion of contextuality to situations with signaling or disturbance. This is the contextuality by default theory. It is strictly a theory of random variables. It's just a mathematical theory. It comes with no physical interpretation. And so another question here that I'll address is whether we can give CBD contextuality a no-go interpretation of the same sort of flavor that the Bell and Cochin Specker theorems come with, whereby a system that is contextual with respect to that definition, that extended definition, can be said to be incompatible with a certain class of a physical model or explanation. So recently, there have been some really interesting results relating contextuality to causal modeling, in particular showing that contextual data always require some sort of fine-tuning to be modeled with a probabilistic causal model. Fine-tuning meaning that the model assumes causal effects that are present within the model, but that are not visible empirically, meaning that when you marginalize over the latent variables, those causal effects disappear. So that applies in situations where we have so fine-tuning means that there's exact conditional independence in the data that's just not respected by the model. What I've been doing is extending that notion to situations where the data don't there's signaling in the data, so you don't have exact conditional independence. And so I generalize the notion of fine-tuning to what I call hidden influence, where there are causal effects in the model that partially cancel out, meaning the strength of the causal effect is greater in the model than it is in the data, basically. And so this amounts to, what comes out of this is a sort of a strengthening of the causal Markov or structural equation modeling condition for asking whether data are compatible with a given causal model. And that strengthened definition embodies a sort of no conspiracy principle that others have formulated, which says, for example, that direct influences, meaning causal influences, are not revealed empirically, are hidden empirically only under very special circumstances, or likewise a causal model, when we try to derive or develop a causal model of empirical data, we should not allow causal connections that are stronger than that are needed to explain the observed differences in the distributions. So there's the motivation. So what I'll talk about here are one method to quantify the strength of causal influence and then thereby define what I call hidden influence in directed acyclic graphs, which in turn leads to a notion of model-based contextuality that I'll offer, or M-contextuality, which is an extension of contextuality to situations with disturbance. It means that data are M-contextual if they're incompatible with a causal model that minimizes causal influences, influences of context onto the observables, or in a Bell scenario, influences of one observer's setting on the other observer's outcome. And the main result here is a no-go theorem for extended contextuality that shows that this definition of M-contextuality is equivalent to the existence of a model that has no hidden influences. So these two definitions in terms of minimizing the strength of causal influence and prohibiting hidden influence are equivalent. They're also equivalent to the previous definition within the CBD theory. And when we restrict to non-disturbing systems, we recover KS non-contextuality. Or when we restrict to Bell scenarios without signaling, we recover Bell locality. So this is a strict, faithful extension of those theories. And then finally, depending on time, I'll talk about extensions of this theory to various graphical structures. So we can talk about contextuality and extended contextuality with respect to particular graph structures. So if you have a certain set of assumptions about where the shared latent randomness is or how things are hooked up causally, then you can ask about contextuality with respect to those assumptions. All right, so I don't have to say much about probabilistic causal models. For this group, I'll just say that I'm talking in terms of DAGs, directed acyclic graphs. People have come up with all sorts of notation used in this. Get to use the stick finally. But I use gray for observed and white for hidden. I think that's the only thing I really need to point out here. Okay, so let's talk about Bell scenarios first, right? So I'm going to talk about a set of observers K. Each observer has a set of observables that I'll denote by F sub Q. So Q is a set of observables for each observer. And then each observer has a setting C, and that determines which measurement is actually made, right? So this variable is sort of it represents a collection of different possible observables depending on the choice of the setup. And then Bell's notion of local causality is for a given distribution over the settings and the measurements, this distribution is Markov with respect to this local graph, so G loc, this notation is going to be useful later on, but G sub loc is just the Bell local graph. So it's Markov with respect to that, meaning that you've got independence between each observer's outcome and other observer's settings. Actually, that's the same thing. And it also obeys the inequality of that graph, which in this case is, for this particular graph, is the CHSH inequality, but of course it generalizes to other situations, more observers and so on. Okay, if your data are not locally causal, if they do not conform to that graph, then of course we can always model them by this more general model that allows signaling. So this is what I call GPD, which is the PD stands for parameter dependence, which is dependence of, well, it's the signaling assumption there, right? So this is a universal graph. It can model any distribution. Or any set of conditional distribution conditioned on C1 and C2, anyway. Okay. Now, this is what I call, this setup is what I call a Bell representation. And again, it hinges on this idea that this thing stands for multiple measurements and the choice of measurement depends on the setting. I also want to talk about what I call a Koch and Specker representation of the same situation. So we can just explicitly indicate each observable available to each observer. So in this case, observer one has observables F1 and F2, and then observer two has observables F3 and F4. And we can just define there's a canonical way of moving between these graphs by just defining each one of these specific measurement operators as the measurement conditioned on the setting. And one thing that this changes, which is something I brought up in the conversation the other day, that I don't think has really come up in this meeting, is that under the representation on the left, we never measure all of the observables at once, right? So on a given run of the experiment, we'll measure maybe those two or those two or those two. And that, anyway, leads to different sets of considerations. But these two representations are equivalent, and I'm going to talk in terms of the Koch and Specker one for a little bit, and then I'll circle back to the Bell representation. All right. So a general Koch and Specker system. This is fairly standard setup. We've got a set of observables, a set of contexts, which you can think of just as a subset of the power set of the observables, meaning each context is nothing but a set of observables. Each observable has a set of outcomes. And those are the cardinality assumptions that I assume. So the formal results, in the paper, I'll prove with full measure theoretic generality. So I don't need to assume any kind of finiteness. anyway, we've got a set of measurements, and then we've got a set of distributions on the context, right? So for each context, I can talk about the set of observables measured in that context, treat them as a joint random variable, and then I've got a distribution on that random variable. Okay, so that is the data. Those mus constitute the data. And then the question is whether those mus are compatible with a global distribution over all of the q's, and that's the standard definition of Koch and Specker contextuality, right? So you have no disturbance, meaning this is the analog to the conditional independence assumption that when you restrict two contexts to their intersection, the intersection here being this bolded q, they agree. So that's no disturbance. Nevertheless, there's no global distribution where you can patch together all of the different contexts. Okay, so this is all standard Koch and Specker contextuality. And then we can talk about modeling this in a causal framework as follows. So we just say that, so this is meant to be a standard Koch and Specker non-contextual model. The C doesn't even do anything, but C stands for context. So the point is, we've got some latent state, some hidden variable that determines the outcomes of all of our observables. And to say it's non-contextual means that the value of each one of these observables depends on the latent state, but it doesn't depend on the context, meaning it doesn't depend on what other variables are being measured. Alternatively, a contextual model would be one in which they do. There are causal influences from context to the outcomes. And so if you wanted to, that's sort of the point of the Koch and Specker theorem and Bell's approach as well, is if you wanted to model contextual data in a classical way, you would have to assume the presence of these causal influences. And that's going to be my focus, is what can we say about those? All right. All right, a couple of other assumptions as far as the modeling goes. I can assume that all of these observables are deterministic, as Jin Tian did yesterday. And moreover, that's actually the only other assumption. And then finally, I can just say that a given model is a model for a given, so I have a measurement system which is a set of those with distributions, and then a model is a model for that system if the conditional distributions in the model match the observed conditional distributions. Okay. All right, so some pretty straightforward results. These are fairly standard. First of all, this model down, this contextual model at the bottom, again, is universal. You can model any distribution or any set of distributions by allowing contextual dependence. And then the second one, this is Fine's theorem, saying that if there is a global distribution if and only if if and only if there's a non-contextual model. So the model at the top of the previous slide, that will match, you can model your data using that graph if and only if there exists a global distribution. It's fairly obvious from the structure of the model that that's the case. Okay. Now, all right, so that's all sort of standard. That's all just living in the world of traditional contextuality. Now I want to move outside and talk about cases where there is disturbance, or there is necessarily some causal influence from context to your measurement outcomes. So I'm going to define this notion of direct influence, which is a strength of causal effect from context to any one of these observables, and it's defined in terms of the models, right? So it's defined with respect to the latent variable lambda. And what I do is I take any one of your any observables, so that's fq's, that's any one of those f's there, and I take any two contexts, so any, these are lowercase c's, any two values of the context, and I look at the comparison between them. And this symbol delta is meant to be a strength of direct influence, and it's just the probability of the set of all latent variables or values of the latent variable such that shifting between the context changes the value of your observable. Right? So that's the strength of the causal effect with respect to the model. We can't measure that, we can't observe that directly because we can't observe lambda, but that's what the model says is the strength of the direct influence.
This is a statistician called compliers and defiers, add up as opposed to
Oh, yes, right, right, right. I mean, in that particular case, right, those are when you've got the binary variables, right? So you classify the, right. So if you have some compliers and some defiers, then they'll cancel out, right? And that's exactly what this diagram is meant to indicate. So if you have the point is that you can have direct influence that cancels out in the marginals, right? And that's the definition of hidden influence. So if both of these sets are non-zero, if there are some lambdas where a switch from C to C prime moves my measurement outcome to be some value V to something else, but there are other lambdas where the very same context switch moves my value, my measurement outcome to be something else, anything else, to being V, then when I look in the marginal, and I look at the overall probability of V, the probability of V doesn't change by as much as the model says the causal influence is, right? So the causal influence is stronger than shows up in the empirical data, right? And that's what hidden influences capture. So that's a property of a particular causal model, not just the graph, but the causal model with all the parameters and such. And what we're going to do is talk about prohibiting hidden influence. So an aligned model is exactly that. It's a model that has no hidden influences. So none of these any of the parameters that go into that, there are no hidden influences. And this formalizes the no conspiracy principle, because what it implies is that, and this may or may not be obvious, but it's sort of a theorem that I'll show in the couple of slides, is that every one of these direct influences is exactly equal to the minimum that's defined by the empirical distributions, meaning the total variation between the empirical distributions. Okay. So an aligned model minimizes the direct influences. So let me give a concrete example now with the PR box. So here we've got four observables, which are the columns, and then we've got four contexts saying which, this is basically, these indices are in, with a Bell indexing saying which measurement the two observers are choosing. But anyway, I don't know if this is a kind of a strange way of representing the PR box, but it says that when A1 and B1 are measured together, they're always equal. Same thing with A1 and B2, A2 and B2, but A1 and B2 are always different. And you can put the zero in any one of those four quadrants, but I put it there. So that's your standard PR box. And here is a causal model of the PR box, where we've got two latent states, two values of lambda, and I've just listed out the value of all four observables for each value of lambda in each of the two contexts. Now, for most of the for three of the four observables, the switch between contexts, so here's observable B2, the switch between the contexts in which it's measured makes no difference, right? So there is no influence of context on this variable. So we have a non-contextual model of B2 and of A2, but we have the model as a whole is contextual because it has a contextual influence on this particular variable, right? So the direct influence of context, when you compare the two contexts in which B1 is measured, well, actually, with probability 1, a switch between contexts is going to change the value of B1. But of course, that washes out in the margin. That's why these arrows are pointing in opposite directions. So this is a hidden influence, right? In order to classically model the PR box, obviously, we have to assume some causal influences that are not respected by the independences in the data. So that's what I mean by hidden influence in a causal model of contextual data. All right. So now we can define M-contextuality as a set of data which requires direct influences, causal influences of context, these arrows here, that are greater than are necessary for the data. Right, and conversely, M-contextual data are ones that simultaneously minimize all of those direct influences. Right, so we can quantify over all possible models of the data for each specific trio here, and this one model minimizes them all simultaneously. So that's the definition of model-based contextuality. So let me say a little more to give some intuition for that. The idea is, with classical contextuality, a non-contextual model is one where there's just simply no influence of context, right? This is Koch and Specker's idea. Here, if you have data where there is signaling, where there is a disturbance, meaning the empirical marginal distributions differ, then there necessarily is some causal influence of context. The question is, are the data compatible with minimizing those causal influences, right? Can we take the causal influences that are necessarily there due to that are manifestly present and say we can assume that much causal influence, but no more? And that's what we mean by model-based non-contextuality. All right, so it's an extension, so this is an extension of contextuality to cases with disturbance.
So
the
question.
Yeah.
In the Pierre Boss case, the answer to what's the minimum, mm-hmm. it would be zero.
Zero, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right, that's right.
So this is the non-zero case is the generalization beyond the existence.
Yeah, right. So hopefully it's obvious that, right, as you're pointing out, in a case where your data have no disturbance, then, I mean, this definition simplifies, well, this definition agrees with KS contextuality. It simply says there exists an M with zero direct influences, yeah. But it applies more generally to cases where there are disturbance. Okay, so here are the main results. In fact, here is the point you just made. So theorem one is when there is no disturbance, then M contextuality and Coach and Specker contextuality agree for exactly the reason that we just said. And then the main result is this one, that for an arbitrary measurement system, potentially with disturbance, M non-contextuality is equivalent to the existence of an aligned model, right? And the proof is sort of what I've already said, is that hidden influence implies that you can reduce some of the those direct influences. Or in other words, an aligned model is one where all the direct influences are minimized. And therefore, the direct influences always match the amount that's manifest in the data. So in other words, we can interpret this M contextuality in a no-go formulation where we can say we have some reason to believe that hidden influences, this is the no conspiracy principle that others have argued for, we have some reason to believe that nature doesn't work this way, that causal influences are fully observable in nature. They don't cross each other, they don't partially cancel out. To the extent you want to make that assumption, then M non-contextuality is the embodiment of that theory, right? That is the appropriate definition of contextuality with respect to that assumption. And I think that is maybe best thought of in terms of the parallel to the work on fine-tuning, where you say we believe that causal influences shouldn't perfectly cancel out in nature, and that's what Rob and others have done in terms of formalizing traditional Coach and Specker and contextuality and Bell locality. Okay. Right. So it also turns out that M contextuality and CBD contextuality are the same. So for folks who don't know about CBD contextuality, again, it's a theory of random variables. The idea is that you take your observed distributions, you assume a set of random variables for every pair of an observable and the context in which it's measured, so these SQCs, and then you talk about a joint distribution. Again, it's just a global distribution over all of them, minimizing the this quantity, which is going to correspond to the direct influence in the model-based approach, the probability that a given observable will take on different values in two different contexts with respect to the master sample space of this coupling. And so CBD contextuality is defined as the non-existence of a multi-maximal coupling, a coupling that minimizes everything. And it's fairly straightforward to show that this is equivalent to M contextuality because there's a natural correspondence between this model-based direct influence and this coupling-based inequality or probability of difference. Yeah. And therefore, as a corollary to everything else, now we have a physical or no-go interpretation of CBD, where a system is CBD non-contextual if and only if it admits this aligned model, meaning that the data are compatible with this no hidden influences principle. Let me circle back now to the Bell representation, since this kind of representation has been much more prevalent this week. we can do everything in the same way. We just sort of have to translate it over to this kind of graph. So once again, we have this multipartite model where the context C in the previous graph just factors as the concatenation of the settings of all the observers, right? And then we can define signaling as the probability of all the values of your latent variable under which a particular observer's outcome, observer K, their outcome changes when you switch from one context to another, provided that that change of context doesn't change that observer's setting. It's just other observers changing their settings. Can that affect the focal observer's outcome? That is our measure of signaling. We can quantify signaling. And then we can talk about hidden signaling in exactly the same way, where the signaling in the model is stronger than is apparent in the data. In other words, you have signaling going in cross directions that cancels out when you marginalize overland. And then you get the same set of results showing that First of all, any system. So this. Where do I have that? Oh, well. Anyway, the graph that allows for signaling is universal. It can model anything. The more important result is that a Bell scenario is M non-contextual if and only if it has a model that minimizes all of the direct influences. When we restrict to situations with no signaling, M non-contextuality reverts to KS non-contextuality. And then the main point is that this definition of this extended definition of contextuality agrees once again with this no hidden signaling principle, right? So if we can model things without hidden signals, that is that's what is in the end meant by this extended notion of contextuality. All right. So that's my interim summary. I don't have any sense of how much time I've taken up. I could just call it a day right here, in fact, or I could do like a couple of minutes summary. Okay. All right. So far what I've talked about is a way of quantifying direct influence, defining hidden influence, and then I've given you this equivalence of three different ways of thinking about extended contextuality. I've done all of this with respect to just two specific forms of graphical models, the one that I call this Cochin-Specker representation and the one that I call this Bell representation. But of course, there's a whole variety of other kinds of ways we could hook up our variables by assuming different latent structures, different causal connections. One thing that I've come to appreciate based on the last couple of days is we might want to also think about conditioning variables, and I'm not going to say anything about that today, but that's another kind of extension we might want to think about. So the question then is, what happens, what sort of notions of contextuality, traditional contextuality as well as extended contextuality, do we get when we consider other kinds of graph structures? Either just because we want to allow for different possibilities, or because we have specific reasons to think about, to believe in particular, shared randomness among the parties, for example, as has come up many times this week, right? It turns out you get different results. So it depends on the graphical structure. So let me give a simple motivating example. This is sort of a degenerate notion, contextual scenario where you've got just two variables. This is not a Bell scenario. This is just two variables that are measured. And in one context, they're both measured in both contexts. So that's why I say it's degenerate. But it comes up in this literature on extended contextuality. In one context, they're positively correlated. In another context, they're negatively correlated. In the margins, each variable has the same marginal across the two contexts, so it seems like there's some sort of conspiracy going on. And indeed, if you try to model this setup where we've got our two observables and we've got a context, you have to, in order to model these data, you have to assume some causal influence of context. And you can do it with just one, from C to Y. I can drop the other one. But anyway, there's a model of these data where X is random, so lambda has 50-50 probability, of course. X is random, and then Y is a parity function of lambda and C, right? So you can get that. And this, of course, is hidden influence because the effect of context on Y goes in opposite directions vertical comparisons, depending on the value of lambda. And that washes out in the marginals. But I can consider a different causal structure where y just directly depends on x. And in that case, I can model this where all of the dependencies are fully observable, right? So x is the same as before. Now y is a parity bit on x and c. And that's fully observable, because we can observe x and we can observe c. And there's marginalizing over lambda doesn't take away any of the information. So we can see this fully. And if we think this is the causal structure, then we would say that this is non-contextual. So I've got a whole bunch of detailed analyses on specific causal structures that I won't talk about in the interest of our breakout session. But let me say this. So the questions are, the questions are, do different choices of our graph structure yield different variants of contextuality, right? Do consideration of different causal paths give us a different notion of what counts as a conspiracy or a hidden causal influence? And the answer, basically, the answer turns out to be yes. And right, so indeed, other graph structures give us different alternative extensions of contextuality, and in some ways that are interesting, and in some ways that are degenerate. So certain graph structures lead to sort of dumb notions of contextuality, where everything's contextual or everything's non-contextual. But certain graph structures and other extensions of these notions give other interesting definitions. And so this I think in the end opens up a there's a lot of further work to do to talk about contextuality with respect to particular graph structures, both classical contextuality and this extended notion of contextuality based on this no hidden influence principle. And I'm going to leave it at that, rather than going into a bunch of the details. Let me just stop there and take any questions. Thanks.
Yeah, I guess just one very, very brief comment about this really interesting talk is that, you know, there's all this literature on paths in statistics and quantifying influences on paths, and there are many, many ways of doing it, and it seemed like some of what you were doing seemed related to, like, as Eli was saying, principal strata direct effects and that kind of stuff. So there's literature on that, there's literature on separable effects, there's, you know, Perl has all the stuff on mediation analysis.
Right, right.
So that might be fun to look into if you're interested in paths, basically.
Yeah.
Cross fertilization of ideas, basically.
Yeah, yeah, thanks. I mean, yeah, just, yeah, very similar to what I was saying in the second part about if we look at different graph structures, you get different notions. Yeah, I think different ways of formalizing, exactly as you said, right? We could come up with different definitions and see which ones are interesting in the context of contextuality consideration. Yeah.
So I would ask, if the last example you gave where when y is allowed to depend on x, you would say there's no hidden influence, because there's no hidden variables, where the hidden variables lead to the observed variables triggering a change in the outcome on the others. But
yep.
If we thought about hidden influence in the sense of not just hidden influence from lambda, let's say hidden influence from x, right? It is still fine-tuned in the sense that if you just look at the dependence of y on x, it appears that for any choice of x, if you sort of forget about c,
yep,
the marginal on y does not depend on x. The marginal of y does not depend on the x. You put an arrow from x to y.
Yep.
So you might say, like, it's still fine-tuned, right? If we were doing, like, exploring causal discovery and rejecting fine-tuned causal models, rejecting this.
Is there a way
of defining measures of fine tuning, as well as the measures of hidden influence, where you did sort of the same thing, but
don't restrict it to lambda, you restrict it like any parent?
Yeah, right. I mean, I think the measure would be the same. I mean, basically what you're saying is that we should be able to, I mean, we should allow ourselves to, you know, up there we're marginalizing over lambda. I'm sort of just repeating you. There we're marginalizing over lambda. Why don't we marginalize over x or marginalize over c? Either one would, right?
Only if c was uniformly distributed would you get the...
Well, okay, yeah, good point. Yeah, good point.
It feels to me, Ellie, that the context here is that c is actually measured, and you have no reason to average over it, assuming equal weights for the two values. And therefore, there's no sense in which you're going to see an independence between y and x.
Yeah.
Now, independence explicitly.
You could, though. So yeah, I mean, that's a really good point about c. You could marginalize over x because we do have a distribution for x, right? It is a proper random variable. And then we would see that for each context, the distribution of y is the same. And so in that sense, the influence of x is being hidden. So I think the question still applies. What I would say is that, well, it's not hidden because we can observe x. And so I think the distinction, well, I mean, all of this is relying on the distinction between observed and unobserved variables, right? I don't want to go so far as to say that, you know, interactions in the traditional, like, you know, undergrad statistics notion of interactions don't exist in nature, right? Like a crossover interaction. So that that's what would come from prohibiting something like that. I mean, this is exact, right? So there is some fine tuning, as you say. But imagine these numbers weren't exactly as they are; they just add some noise to them. You would still have you'd still have hidden influence if you marginalized over x. And to me, that seems like it's too strong. I guess the principle, because we can observe x, right? So I guess the principle would be that if there are interactions in the world, then we should be able to find the variables that are responsible for them. Maybe that's the way of putting it. Yeah, I guess that's the best I have to say to it.
Maybe then just follow up as a version to you and also to the people who were in the model selection discussion. I think about constraint-based cause discovery as saying, maybe like return all DAGs where the independence relations implied by the DAG are satisfied by the distribution, and where all independence relations exhibited by the distribution are implied by the DAG. So it's both faithful and a valid explanation. And I would think like score-based causal discovery might say, no, it's okay if you have a little bit of a violation of a conditional independence, and it's okay if there's a little bit of unfaithfulness, but we're going to sort of penalize them and try to...
Every fault washes out, right? It's going to give you the same graph at the end, because score-based stuff is consistent.
I'm just wondering whether... are there scores for unfaithfulness the same way that there are notions of like scoring as a penalty for when the DAG implies a conditional independence relation and the distribution doesn't have it, you can penalize that. But if the distribution does have something like a conditional independence relation and the DAG does not, doesn't imply that, so it's a form of fine tuning.
Right.
Can you penalize that as well? Have there been scores constructed as like measures of fine tuning?
So you want. You want to comply because the you can be unfaithful, but only weakly unfaithful, something like that.
Yeah. Because this is you know in some way building towards that. It's measures of these sort of correlations which are sort of not evident in sort of just directly looking at things in a simple way.
Good question.
Yeah, I mean one thing you could do that's, you know, not even specific to this hidden influence or cross influence thing, but you could say sort of paralleling like a regularized regression approach where you have, you know, strength of regression weights, you should be able to if you're going to for a given DAG, you should be able to quantify the strength of those dependencies and just put penalties on those strengths, or, you know, Bayesian priors on those strengths, right? And then a model that can fit the data but requires stronger influences, and for example, crossed influences, in order to fit the data, is going to be penalized more than a model that doesn't. And then you're going to get like this will be a more sensitive continuous constraint that'll act within a particular causal structure to differentiate how complex that causal the explanation has to be within that causal structure.
Thanks, Sonia.
I'm not sure the conversation has wandered from there, but. So some of the, would there be any way of, say, identifying, like through this, are you able to identify these contexts, or are they taken priority?
Identify the contexts?
In terms of the ones that might be relevant to changing the effect.
Oh, I see. I haven't done anything in terms of finding models, right? So the question would be, for example, right, this is all just sort of mathematical as opposed to computational, right? So given a data set, right, if we know that there's, I mean, say there's disturbance in the data set, then there's the question of, well, does there exist a model that, and as I understand it, this is generally a hard problem, just to ask, is there a model that has no hidden influence? But then, you know, can we identify the model that minimizes it? And moreover, there should be situations where you could choose, right? You could say, well, maybe the hidden influence is, you know, from Alice's setting to Bob's measurement, or the other way around. And maybe there are situations where like those are different local minima, right? But one is a better fit than the other, or maybe it's perfectly symmetric. Right, all sorts of interesting questions there.
I think related to the mediation analysis, kind of stuff that was mentioned in some of this, would be a similar kind of along the similar lines. But just wondering.
Right.
In your example of PR-less, you gave like a model which reproduces it,
yep,
for which there was hidden influence in a particular context.
Yes.
Right.
But you could always push the.
Oh yeah, you can move that around anywhere you want. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, in that case, it was totally arbitrary the way I chose to model it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you can do other fun things with the PR box where I've got that here somewhere, where if you choose, this one, oh yeah. So if you allow influence from, you know, one observer's outcome to the other, from A1 to A2, then, I mean, here's a model of the PR box where there are no hidden influences, right? Because maybe I shouldn't walk through all this, but you mean it just you just have A2 depending on A1 in a way that's fully observable. Is very similar to the model that we just had up when we were discussing about marginalizing over X. So anyway, that kind of thing happens as well, where the hidden influence changes depending on the structure you assume. Yeah.
I love this example because here, like, if you were to add the order from C1 to A2. Presumably, then you would have the sort of context dependence.
Yeah, and hidden influence,
hidden influence.
Yes, yes.
And here you don't.
Right.
So the PR box, of course, can be explained with various causal relaxations as you follow channels to do it.
Yep.
You can have what we call outcome signaling or signaling from the input. So this is a motivation to say, like, here is a clearly defined thing which says that when you have to choose between explaining the direction outcome signaling versus settling signaling, you should do with outcome signaling.
Yeah, I guess that's one way of putting it. So yeah, this was sort of the classification that I skipped over. But in the Bell scenario, well, this is tripartite, right? You have different kinds of connections, just like what Ellie was just talking about, right? So you can have outcome dependence, or you can have parameter dependence, or you can have both, right? So I end up classifying the graph structures in this way. And you've got arbitrary other stuff, right? But that's the one I analyzed in the first part of the talk, and that one gives you nice, clean results that extend Cochin-Specker contextuality. This is the one that's got a funny name that I was just that I just used for modeling the PR box, and maybe the name kind of works for its omnipotence because it can model a PR box without any hidden influence. Never thought about that coincidence, Yeah, exactly. So this is, I think, one nice way to think about this distinction between outcome dependence and parameter dependence.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had just a very small comment that I think your formalism would be good at quantifying what I would call the sort of contextual excess baggage of certain interpretations of quantum theory. So if you look at Bohmian mechanics postulates more contextuality than is strictly necessary by the Cauchy-Specker theorem. Uh-huh. So there are some very simple examples where I have a binary outcome measurement represented by some, you know, just projective measurement on a qubit. But the details of how I implement that measurement in Bohmian mechanics means that for one and the same value of the invariables, the Bohmian configuration, I get opposite outcomes of that measurement. Right? So it's very much like the example you're saying, right?
Yeah.
You flip the outcome condition on the hidden variable.
Right.
And the Cauchy-Specker theorem doesn't say that has to happen, right? It's unnecessary contextuality, but that's the way Bohmian mechanics works. So mm-hmm. you can go to those and say, well, this is a situation where in principle I don't need any influence of the context.
Right.
And yet Bohmian mechanics avails itself of some influence. And so here's how much contextual excess baggage Bohmian mechanics has in this situation and that situation.
Yeah, that.
And there's other
things. Nice.
I mean, I'm picking on Bohmian mechanics, but there's many that hardwire in contextuality and have excess baggage.
Yeah, right. So maybe that analysis would at least adjudicate among them in some manner. Yeah. Some having more excess baggage than others. Yeah, that's very cool. Yeah.
So this was related to something Stefan and I were discussing a little bit, which is the fact that a lot of this formalism, like, lies DAG language. For various historical reasons, or maybe because of the way these experiments are prepared, they're kind of prepared in a DAG-like sort of way. Mm-hmm. But since you're worried about like output-dependent scenarios of various kinds, I just wanted to, you know, point out that there are other ways of thinking about outcome dependence with other kinds of graphs that are undirected and that have different semantics and different Markov structures.
Sure.
And indeed, people who worry, like in statistics, people who think about outcome dependence and like interference and data dependence problems, they use that stuff as well.
Right.
And the reason they do it not the DAGs is because like they think about networks, and in networks the dependence is symmetric. And not always symmetric in a way like a red edge is symmetric, like in other ways, right?
So yeah.
That might be also fun to think about.
Like in a Markov random field sense where
Yeah,
sure.
Like in a number of, exactly right.
Yeah. No, I think that makes a lot of sense. I've come to appreciate that more this week. And right, so this is still sort of a restricted universe of graphs for the reasons you're saying. Yeah, thanks.
Just one clarify question. So your context is observed, but are you using the language parameter for your context as well?
Am I using the language parameter? Yeah.
Parameters.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
So your parameters are observed? Is that what you're going on here? In that sense?
Well, maybe I'm not understanding. I mean, they're observed in the, I mean, they're parameters in the sense of the talk yesterday where they're not stochastic, right? They're just set, right?
Yeah.
Is that the sense in which you mean?
Yeah, I think so. It's okay. I might ask you after if that's okay.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, so I was wondering if you meant like, because there are also, you know, parameters that specify all these causal relations. That's a different notion of the word parameter.
That's what I'm getting. The parameter's being used two ways.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree. It's just a sort of a terminology kind of challenge. But yeah, I mean, these things I treat as being fixed, you know, non-stochastic, you know, independent variables, I suppose, is another way of saying it. But everything is in terms of conditional distributions of these things, conditioned on those, so you never actually worry about the distributions of those things.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is similar to the point that Rob made several minutes ago about you can't actually marginalize over them.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Matt, again.
Thanks.